This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Football season is here. Yeah, and of course that means pizza, wings, and beer. Lots of people brew their own beer, and it just became legal in all 50 states, so now you can brew your heart out. How about a nice living room lager or a pantry-style pilsner? As any home brewmeister will tell you many times, brewing can go bust, literally. When your ales fail, when good brews go bad, we call it a food failure, and that's the name of a new series we're kicking off this week, no pun intended. What can go wrong with your home brew and why? If you're a home brewer, you have any questions, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. Are you having failures of in your brewery? We'll talk about it now with Chris Kuzmi. He is the brewer at 508 Gastro Brewery here in New York and co-host of the Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, Ira.
You brought in a whole bunch of different brews here.
I did. I've got four beers here. Two of them are made from some of my favorite home brewers around a couple named Haley and Steven. Steven Durley, Haley Jensen. They are very creative, really wonky people, and make incredible beer. Two of them I made at 508 Gastro Brewery, but the principles are the same.
How is beer made? What is going on when you make beer?
Beer is easy. If you can make oatmeal, you can make beer. Basically, what we're doing is we're making a giant oatmeal. We're taking these grains and we're throwing them into a pot of water with hot water. This mm-hmm. water is hot, and right. the water is called liquor at this point, but it's the only time it's ever called liquor, because once it hits the grains and converts these sugars or these starches over to sugar, then it becomes what we call wort, and it's this viscous sugar water all that we've gotten from the mm-hmm. grain. We separate the solids from the liquid. We send the liquid over to a boil kettle. We boil it, and this is where we introduce hops. And the reason we introduce hops is to provide bitterness, to act as a preserving agent, and also to get flavor and aroma. Mm-hmm. And so you typically add hops three different times during that boil. Then we introduce our fourth ingredient, which is yeast. If we were to introduce yeast immediately after the boil, the yeast would die because it'd be too hot for the yeast to survive. So we have to cool that wort as fast as we can, and then introduce it to yeast at roughly 65 degrees, depending on whether you're making a lager or ale, and then let it ferment and let it do its thing.
How long does that take?
It depends on the beer, on how long it takes to be good. And so there are two kinds of beers, aside from my general answer, which is, you know, there are two kinds of beer, good beer and the other kind. I think it's the same thing like what Duke Ellington said about music. You know, there are two kinds.
Right.
But scientifically, for Science Friday, there are actually only two kinds of beer, and that's ales and lagers. Now, that comes down to the kind of yeast that you're using. Ales ferment between 65 and 75 degrees, generally, mm-hmm. and lagers ferment between 55 and 65. Lager means to cold store, so lagers take longer than ales. But you can, as a home brewer, have a drinkable ale in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And what's the main failure?
Which is fairly fast. The main failure.
Amateur beer makers, or even professional.
Well, I think we should not scare anybody. It is really, really easy to make beer. You know, as long as your practices are sound. And what I mean by that, the main failures, the most common problems, come down to infections and sanitization. I mean, there are a couple books that we all started with as homebrewers. One of them is by the godfather, Charlie Papazian. He's got this book called The Complete Joy of Homebrewing. A great book, but his philosophy is like, relax, have a homebrew. It's cool, and it's true. It's easy. You're going to make a good beer generally. But there's this other book that I started with, the handbook by Dave Miller. And he's like, be scared. Be very scared. There's bugs all around you, and it's going to ruin your beer. And so I brew on the defensive, but that means sanitize, 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 clean, 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 sanitize, clean again, sanitize.
You mean if there bacteria can contaminate the process?
Correct, yes.
And what happens when that happens?
When that happens, you get a bunch of off flavors that are just not pleasurable, and your beer won't keep well, depends. I mean, people deliberately inoculate their beers with bacteria to achieve different flavors, and so I have two beers here, actually, that are examples of that. Uh-huh. But it's not what you intended. And as a brewer, you want control over what's your final product. Otherwise, how are you going to, mm-hmm. you know, improve?
You mean there are people who actually leave the beer out in the open to get natural?
Absolutely.
You know, that sounds like Michael Pollan when he talks about baking bread.
Yes,
instead of putting store-bought yeast in it, he lets it sit out there.
Yeah.
That's sort of the same thing that you're talking
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been we haven't been fermenting. Things have been fermenting for, you know, since the beginning of their existence. I mean, there's right. lactobacillus and there's just bacteria and there's funky stuff everywhere. You're probably fermenting right now.
I'm fermenting.
You gotta sanitize up with it.
All right, I have two little cups of beer that you've poured. What am I looking at here? These two.
So both of those are really light in alcohol. The clear one is the kind of the lighter one. The soft white one is the one I kind of wanted to talk about today because we're talking about sour things
right.
and in a brewery, one problem with sour notes or with these bacteria, they are 1/10 of the size or smaller than the size of the typical yeast cells that we deal with as a brewer. Mm-hmm. And they can hide out in any crevice, any crack, anywhere in a brewery and come out at random times and totally ruin your beer. So as a home brewer, you want to separate your equipment. As a pro brewer, you probably want to really separate your equipment or not do it at all.
I see.
But I did do this at 508, this beer that you have right there. But
right.
the way I did it was to do a kettle soured beer. That is a style of beer called a Gosa. It's an old German style beer. It's really sour, salt, and it uses salt.
I've never tasted anything like it.
It's crazy. It's a lot of fun. I brewed that with a friend of mine named John Moxie from Perennial Artisanal Ales. We did a kettle sour. We let lactobacillus get into the kettle, and then we boiled after we got to the sourness that we wanted. So the lactobacillus lived and died right there in the kettle, and then we fermented it. So none of that lactobacillus got into the rest of my brewery, and that was it's a really fun technique.
Mm-hmm. It has like an interesting aftertaste.
Yeah.
It hangs around for a while.
That's the salinity. So that's there's salt in that. And actually that one has Pacific Ocean seawater
mm-hmm.
that I brought back from a sailing trip recently.
So you can put anything you want.
There are no rules, man. It's, yeah.
Let's go to the phones. People have questions. Let's go to Philip in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Philip.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey there.
I enjoy the talk about salt. Seawater,
yes,
and how it basically contributes to the whole methodology of brewing beer. And I'm just concerned about people that if they can fit a 5-gallon carboy into their like home dishwasher, it's fine. But they have to be concerned about making sure they clean it out well enough. That they can, I mean, nobody's going to have an autoclave in their
correct
living room. And but there is some concern about once you get that thing capped, you have to take care of it, and it's not just going to the grocery store and buying a beer. You have to know what you're doing, and I'm just wondering about because. Buddies of mine, this is like 20 years ago, we made beer and we had access to an autoclave, and we took old 16-ounce Narragansett bottles and autoclaved them. And we capped them and made great beer. But I wonder about
people
the technology.
People can't do that now. Yeah. Is there a danger if you cannot thoroughly sterilize your stuff like he was talking about?
Well, you should be able to. I mean, if you rinse it out really well enough with hot water and then use – actually, there's powdered brewing wash that you can get at any homebrew store. But also, there's OxyClean. You can use a concentration of OxyClean that will really, really get out, you know, all the stuff, even like all beer crud in old bottles that you can – and then you can reuse those bottles. He was talking about, you know, you really have to take care of it when it goes. So other problems, Ira, you're asking about, you know, what can go wrong.
Right.
I bought a homebrew kit for a friend of mine, and everything went great. And then we got to bottling time. At bottling time, we didn't talk about that part at the end of the process. If we're talking about carbonation, how
right.
do you carbonate your beer? Most homebrewers prime it with sugar. Basically, at this point, all the yeast has kind of fermented itself out and created yeast cake on the bottom. Mm-hmm. But there's still some yeast left in suspension. And if you excite that yeast a little bit, it'll start producing CO2. And you want to cap it off in a bottle or a keg, and it'll absorb that CO2. But if you prime it with too much sugar, then you'll have exploding bottles all over the place. Or if you have it stored in a temperature that's higher than it wants to be, or not appropriate with the amount of sugar that you put in, then you're going to have exploding bottles.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some more calls in here. John in Pasco, Washington. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hey there.
Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I'm an avid home brewer. I've been doing so for 20 years. I have a very sophisticated conical stainless system. I'm a heliarc welder, so I know how to do all those things.
I'm very jealous right
now. And I have a question about getting more hop aroma into my beers.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually let them sit in the cone for 28 days and dry hop them in the cone for the last seven of that. And then I usually prime them with dextrose to about two volumes of CO2. And I just can't get those bold hop aromas that I try to do. And I've added, I've tried adding every amount of hop.
All right, John, let's get it. We're running out of time. Let's see if I can get an answer from Chris.
Okay, yeah. I would say that if you use one, I mean, how many times have you been dry hopping?
Oh, he's gone.
Okay, I would dry hop more than once. If you're going to keep it in there for 28 days, I would dry hop more than once, and I would have it do it for like 3 days at a time and get it out there. The reason you only want to do it for 3 days at a time, I mean, you can talk to a lot of different brewers, and they'll give you different answers here. And I'm relatively new to the dry hopping game, but I've been having fun and success with what I've been at. Leave it in there for a short amount of time and do it over and over again.
Now, we've had chemistry geeks on here and physics geeks on here. We've never had a brewing geek calling up with these very geeky questions. But there are a lot of brewers, right?
There are a lot of brewers.
Do they understand what they're doing, the chemistry-wise, and you know what's going on inside the brewery?
As a home brewer, you don't have to know everything that's going on scientifically. You just have to know that it's going to work and trust that your sanitation measures that sanitation is key.
Yeah, you keep saying that over and over again.
It's the most important thing. That and fermentation temperatures, so that you're not, having exploding bottles or yeast that's getting too excited. That's the only thing. But you can get in there. The information is out there. There's a lot of different podcasts for that. There's a lot of information on the interwebs, and there's a lot of join your local homebrew clubs. That's one of the biggest things. If you don't have a local homebrew club, start one.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Chris Kuzmi, brewer at 508 Gastro Brewery and co-host of a podcast called
The Man About It.
You say it so well. It's not in Brooklyn, is it?
It is in Brooklyn.
Of course.
Every Monday, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. for Man About It.
Yeah.
That's with
Mary Izette.
There you go. Let's go get some more calls in if we can. Kiva in Cincinnati. Hi, Kiva.
Hi.
Hi, Kiva.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I have a question about like someone who's not even like touched a homebrew kit at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wanting to start, but is it okay to just go with one of those like box, like brew your own beer kits, or is it just better just to buy all the individual things you need? And I have another question. I really like IPAs like a lot. Like, should I start out making one of those, or should I just do something basic?
No, if you like IPAs, do something you like. You know the flavor that you're going for. And yes, it's okay to get a box kit and do that. If I were to start homebrewing today versus, you know, when I started in 2001, I would take the approach of brew in a bag. And my girlfriend Mary Izette hit me to that, the co-host. Brew in a bag. It's like shake and bake. It's awesome. So when we make beer, we have three vessels. We have the hot liquor tank where we get the water hot. We've got our mash tun where we mix all that grain together and make our oatmeal per se. And then we have our boil kettle. With a brew in a bag method, you have the boil kettle, and then you get your hot water hot in your boil kettle, and then you throw a mesh bag in there. It's a strainer kind of thing. So basically, we're making a giant tea. Yeah, it's great. And my girlfriend sews, so she made ours. So we have fits our kettle perfectly. And then you know when you're done with that mash, an hour of that oatmeal, all the starch is converted to sugar. You just lift that bag up, and you're ready to boil right there. It saves time. It saves equipment. It's fun. And it makes great, great beer.
Okay,
what's the first thing that someone should know? Like, the very first thing before you go into, like, brewing beer, like...
Sanitize. Clean again.
Three most important things in beer brewing. Sanitize.
I work with bread, so that's...
Oh yeah.
Keep up with that. Yeah.
No, I mean it's fun, and I think the most important thing is that there are no rules. If you work with bread and you're a cook and you imagine a flavor, you can probably get that flavor in beer.
All right, Kiva. Good luck to you.
Great. Thanks.
If you wanted to make a beer for Thanksgiving now, is it too early? Too late? Can you get a beer done?
No,
by
we're
Thanksgiving?
Good by Thanksgiving. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I understand from reading that patience is key here. That's how you can have that bottle bomb blow up on you if you're not patient.
Well, yeah, I mean, Yeah. If you're like, oh, it doesn't really work like that. If you want your beer carbonated really fast, you wouldn't just put more sugar into your bottle. Then you'd definitely have the bottle bombs no matter what.
If you bottle it too soon without...
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. No, yes. Absolutely. Yes. Good call.
What's happening there with your bottle?
So there's too much yeast left in suspension. The sugar or the yeast has not eaten enough of the sugars. It's still got work to do before it's ready to start carbonating. And if you're not going to kill the yeast by really cold crashing it, getting the yeast out of there, or by putting potassium sorbate and really killing the yeast, then you're going to have too much excitement.
And how do you get fruity tastes in beers? Can you just put pieces of fruit in there? Pumpkin
or
orange?
You can certainly do actual fruit in beer, no problem. But there are also, there are a lot of different fruity esters that come along with different yeast strains. So if you want to, and you can also manipulate your yeast strains by fermenting at different temperatures in order to get these different flavors. So a lot of American ale yeast can get very citrusy if you ferment them a little bit higher than they're used to. You can get pepper notes and all sorts of fun stuff from saisons, using a saison yeast. I mean, these are the variables that come in.
Now, you hear all these commercials on TV for the regular brewers. They have all these special cold brewing, all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
you don't need any of that stuff, all those techniques.
These fancy words, beer is beer, and it's love. What you need is love. Every glass needs love.
I can't think of a better way to end this segment. Every glass needs love. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Kuzmi is the brewer at 508 Gastro Brewer here in New York and co-host of your podcast.
Ferment About It.
And that can be heard when?
On Heritage Radio Network on Monday nights, 7 p.m. We talk about fermenting everything, not just beer.
Oh,
so, whey fermented
cabbage.
Sodas. Yes, yeah, absolutely. We did cabbage just 2 weeks ago.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
That's about all the time we have for today. BJ Lederman composed our theme music. We had help from NPR librarian Kim Molesky. If you want to know more about the beer, you want to catch up on stuff we talked about, go to our website at sciencefriday.com. We've got all the links that Chris mentioned there. Also, check out stuff on Facebook. We're on there all week long. If you like us on Facebook. And you can tweet us at SciFry, SCIFRI. Have a great holiday weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.